This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is Saturday Magazine.
Chris Chamberlain from Australian Business Traveller is on the phone. Good morning, Chris, and I know a lot of our listeners check the Australian Business Traveller website and read the articles. Well done. You guys do great work.
Good morning. Thanks. I appreciate that.
Look, in the news recently, certainly in the business travel news, the Middle Eastern airlines have, which made their reputation on, to use one of their slogans, flying reimagined, and et cetera. And what they've been doing lately is lots of little cutbacks. I call it, I'm not sure what you'd call the Middle East, but here, call it the salami slicing. So one little...
I'd say it's almost like peeling off a Band-Aid very slowly, rather than doing everything at once. It's very progressive. This week, this is changing. Next week, something else is winding back.
So things like, pyjamas in business class, airport transfers, levels of lounge access, the number of points you need to redeem for a reward. Now, bearing in mind that Middle East Airlines, they get fuel cheaper than anyone else, just quietly. Their fares are comparable. What is behind this? I mean, with Etihad, it's obviously they invested in Air Berlin, which I thought was interesting, but why anyone would have invested in Alitalia? And of course, they did, and they did lost $1 billion on that.
Yeah, they haven't done well with their investment in foreign airlines. I think that's where a lot of the losses began. And then some of their passenger revenues are down as well, losing money. So from the accountant's perspective, I think they're just trying to take out anything that's costing them extra money that most other airlines might not be doing. But those are the things that many passengers had come to enjoy and sort of associated with their brand when they really went big a few years ago and had Nicole Kidman up the front promoting, this is Etihad, but promoting the new first class and the residents. But yeah, everything's just slowly winding back. I mean, something I loved about Abu Dhabi Airport when flying through is that in the lounge they used to have, it was called the Style and Shave Salon.
I know.
Yeah, what happened to that?
They cut that just this month, I think.
I landed there, Chris, all ready to have my head shaved, and the joint was closed.
Yeah, that's right. And it was such a great feature too, because if you're on a long trip, you probably haven't had a lot of time lately because you've been packing and racing to the airport and stuck on a plane. So it's a great way to sort of get presentable again before you land for your business meeting. And it was something that Etihad did that I'm not aware of any other airline that has that had a similar sort of feature.
Yeah, so rather than shaving your head, they're shaving the benefits.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's not very good, is it?
So now, a lot of listeners may not be aware of this, but if you actually have a bit of a search on the Australian Business Traveller website, Chris actually had, when Chris got married, he had his honeymoon and all his flights on points, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right. And it was 7 business class flights all up. We went to Europe, so we did London, Paris and Venice, but we also flew through Singapore and Hong Kong. And about 2 weeks of hotel stays, all booked using points. And so the real amount of money it actually cost us was less than $3,000 each, and honestly, I've paid more than that just for a
so how many
London over Christmas. And
so how many points did that involve?
It was probably around $500,000 that I'd been saving up over a few years in about 4 or 5 different frequent flyer programs. So earned from not just flying, but things like credit card spend and online shopping and any other chance that you have to earn points. I basically took it and was just building a nice little nest egg to spend it on something good.
Chris, I happen to be sitting with a frequent flyer queen next to me here in the studio at the moment. Macca has so many points, he'd probably never use them in his lifetime.
Oh, no. Stop spending them, because the airlines change the rates every now and again. So they put up how many points you need to book a flight. So if you've already earned those points, they become less valuable. Spend.
Yes.
3.9 million.
Oh, wow. Okay, I don't know which airline that's with, but if that's Qantas, that's enough for probably 6 round-the-world trips in first class, if not a bit more.
Gee.
So you're sitting on a very nice little bounty there.
Well, not Qantas, but a bit further in the alphabet in an Australian airline.
well, there you go, Velocity. You can still book first class with that.
Exactly. So a lot of people, Chris, don't think, and TASS is perhaps not exactly in this category, but a lot of people think collecting points, and no pun intended, is pointless. It's actually not pointless, is it?
No, it's not at all. And you don't really have to fly either to earn frequent flyer points, despite what the name is.
So, I do that, Macca. Macca thinks that I don't collect points. I actually do collect points. And interestingly enough, most of my points come from just ordinary credit card transactions.
Exactly.
And I do pay for the privilege of that service, but I do collect frequent flyer points along the way. And I have actually used them for an upgrade. Not without its dramas, of course. And I have used them once for a... And I actually didn't think it was actually such great value to use them for a flight because...
Depends.
Because at the end of the day, you still have to pay your taxes and the taxes seem to be about 50% of the value of the FM.
No.
Yeah, exactly. If you're booking economy, that's where it becomes a bit not sort of worth it because of the price you pay for an economy ticket, half of that is built up in the government taxes and the fuel surcharges and everything else the airline tack on. But if you use them to sort of fly business class, if you can, the amount you pay on the side isn't really much more. But most business class tickets tend to cost sort of 2 to 4 times what you'd pay for economy in real money. So that's where you get a bit more value out of them. But, I mean, if you're still using them to book a flight, you're still getting some value out of them, much better than sitting on them and never, ever spending them. But if you really want to maximise it, if you can get a seat at the pointy end of the plane, pardon the pun, then that's probably the best way you can spend those points.
Yeah.
Interestingly, one of the frequent flyer schemes recently sent an email out to its members, but basically, you know, the old joke is, you know, with these frequent flyer points, don't use them to buy a toaster. They gave an example. If you had this many points, you could actually buy 10 toasters or you could have 4 return flights to the US.
Yeah, exactly. The amount they charge for products from the store is insane because they have to buy them, whereas a seat on an aircraft, it was already going to fly to that destination anyway, so it costs them a lot less. It's much better value that way.
What do you think, Chris, is, to use that wonderful term, the best points hack you can do? What gives you the biggest bang for your buck in terms of points?
For most people, it can actually be credit card spend because that means any time you spend money anywhere on anything, you can earn points. So it doesn't matter if it's $5 or $5,000. If you're using a card that earns points and it doesn't have a points cap that stops you from earning after you've spent a certain amount of money, or as long as you stay within your cap, depending on your situation, that can really be how you can clean up. You can earn up to 1.5 points per $1 spent on some of the higher-end credit cards. And if you're spending, you know, maybe $50,000 a year as a household, that's 75,000 frequent flyer points. That's more than enough for a business-class ticket to Asia.
Yeah. Now, do you don't lay awake at night, Chris, thinking about points, do you?
No, I sleep very well.
Just tell us.
No, when I do want to book a trip, it does often take a bit of research because there's a lot of people find you can't often get seats on the exact flight you want on the day if you want to travel. So I often have to sort of sit there searching, maybe try different partner airlines, but eventually I get my trips booked and sort of can then relax.
And flexibility is the key there. Just quickly going back before we go to what we were talking about earlier with the Middle Eastern airlines, do you think this death of 1,000 cuts is ultimately going to harm, you know, their passenger loads? Because people, particularly in business class, get quite used to all these things and different airlines still offer them. Do you think it's going to have an impact on them?
I've seen some people commenting that because of one certain cut or another, they've stopped flying with a particular airline. So you'd want to hope that the airline accountants have done their real numbers and said, okay, well, if we're going to lose this much money by losing this many passengers, are we going to save even more than that by cutting these things? So if they've done the numbers, it might be okay, but you really hope they get those numbers correct if that's the case.
Now, there's always a lot of discussion about, which airline, you know, is best. If you had to name the 3 best airlines flying internationally, so let's say to the US or to Europe, out of Australia, which 3 would you choose?
A lot of people these days are leaning towards Virgin Australia to the US purely because it has its newest, the business product, which is a fully flatbed, 1-to-1 seating, so everyone gets direct aisle access, and there's a bar on the plane, which is awesome if you're on a daytime flight And anytime I'm on those flights out of the East Coast, even, you know, Melbourne, Sydney or Brisbane, they all depart around the same time.
Yep.
There are so many people at the bar. They just go and, you know, socialise. Whereas some of the other airlines, I mean, Qantas has started flying its new 787 Dreamliner, which has a comparable business class seat, but it's older A380s and 747s. Some of them go as wide as 7 seats across in business compared to 4. So that's a very common complaint we hear compared to some of the other airlines. But going sort of to Asia onwards to Europe as well, we get a lot of good feedback about Singapore Airlines because most of their flights into Australia now have that same standard as well, the fully flat bed. Direct aisle access, and they've just started flying their newest A380s to Sydney, which has their brand new product, and even sort of a quasi double bed kind of thing in business class. And also many people like Qatar Airways as well, which flies its A380 out of Melbourne, so it's got first class business and economy, and again all the business is flat bed. But what I like about Qatar is you can dine on anything anytime you want. So I was on a flight back from Doha and it was leaving almost in the middle of the night. I didn't feel like getting on and eating dinner because I'd done that on the ground before getting on the plane. So I went to sleep, woke up halfway through the flight when everyone else was sleeping, ordered breakfast off the menu from, you know, what would have been served the next morning. And then later in the flight when everyone else was eating breakfast, landing into Sydney at sort of 6 p.m, I was eating dinner because I could do that from their anytime menu. So having that flexibility, a lot of people like that.
It's good. We've run out of time, Chris. Thank you for those little insights and appreciate your time. I know you've got a pretty full day today.
I do indeed.
Try to get some relaxation in there.
Oh, look, he will.
I will try. It is a Saturday.
We've just had a great chat with Chris Chamberlain from the Australian Business Travel.
Do you have a look at that? I do, actually.
I do.
Some great, but they also have news and current affairs.
They have
all
great
sorts of
articles.
Stuff. Really?
I actually like their feature pieces into interesting places around the world.
Yes.
Love those. We just need to acknowledge lovely Greg from East Bentley, who's become a member, taken out a family membership.
And made a donation as well.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you so much. Makes a difference. It really, really does. Message here from 317. He says, Emirates business or first
class?
They
say.
There's a bar in the first class section, Macca, and a shower in first class. Try and upgrade. Yes, look, I've flown Emirates. Have had a shower at 38,000 feet.
There you go.
Which is actually quite...
Have you joined the Mile High Club, Macca?
I'm a life member, Tess.
Look, the other thing I've got to say is I just want to acknowledge this. Chris talked about, you know, the top three airlines and he named Virgin. I just want to remind our listeners that Virgin actually, and this is not a paid ad, of course, at all, Virgin is one of our sponsors. He's sponsoring this particular show and we're really happy about that.
And they're flying a lot of our volunteers to Sydney next week for Mardi Gras. For our 4-day extravaganza of joy, 4 days, 40 years, which is being simulcast on SBS Radio on Digital 3. And Saturday Magazine is for 3 hours next Saturday.
And right across the nation.
Around the world.
You can listen to us no matter where you are.
In fact, you know, the dummy in the Tesla Roadster near Mars is probably listening.
Hi, this is John Borghetti's here at Virgin Australia. For 22 years, Joy has been the voice of the GLBTI community. Virgin is a proud sponsor of Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.